This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
It has been a hot minute since Doc and I just sat down and had a chat. Here we are, sitting down in the Think Tank, having a chat. We're gonna cover ISIS and guns. It's like Christmas come late for me. I'm very excited about this.
Are you armed? Are you armed, Mike?
I'm always armed. Always armed. Let's start with talking about ISIS, Doc.
ISIS,
you brought this to the table. Yeah. Where do you want to go with some ISIS?
I want to talk about their use of social media, and here's the kind of the interesting hook on this: how it's in a way an automatic advantage to a sort of renegade outfit over a big institution when you're dealing in this realm.
Okay.
Let me tell you the story.
Give me the players first, because you said little institution against
I mean, the renegade is ISIS.
Renegade's ISIS.
The big institution is the United States government.
Early analysis was saying 31,000 members deep, ISIS.
And a huge, believe it or not, social media operation. There are, and this comes from somebody who has analyzed this, thousands of pro-ISIS Twitter accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is filled with disaffected young men who, in the words of the columnist Friedman, said they've never had a girlfriend, they've never had a job, they don't have any sense of self-worth. That's a lot of what's going on here.
Sure.
And then you overlay that with a sort of a pseudo-religious thing to give people a cause. And what is scary about this analysis, they said, somebody expresses some sentiment of disaffection or something like this on any one of these feeds, they get contacted by somebody who expresses sympathy. And basically who promises them what they want, which is a cause, excitement, a girlfriend.
Friendship.
All that kind of stuff.
70-something of them in the afterlife.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Sure.
To people that's the motivation. And they overlay it with a pseudo-fake, bastardized version of religion. And the State Department responds to this in terms of Twitter accounts.
Mm-hmm.
They have one. And you know what it says? It has a great big State Department seal, and it says, if you do this, we will kill you.
Nice. Catchy.
Catchy.
I like it. Direct and to the point.
Right. About as effective as telling your teenager, don't smoke because if you do, they're going to die, when the message should be, if you smoke, you're going to stink and girls won't go within 20 feet of you.
Sure.
So herein, however, lies the tricky thing, is that they kind of know a way to deal with this, but it's politically toxic. And that's the following. They could engage to sort of undermine the fake religious aspect of this. They could engage moderate Muslim clerics to basically debunk the false version of religion.
Who's they?
They is the State Department.
State Department. Thank
the State
you.
Department. Right. United States government.
Yeah, we just got to say.
Which means.
Go with the teams here we're talking about.
Basically, it's a State Department kind of operation. The State Department is the sort of non-military outreach form of
that
the U.S.
That seems like
government.
Low-hanging fruit. Why haven't they?
Well, here's the problem is you could engage sort of moderate imams and religious leaders, but it's almost impossible to find one such person who at some point in their career hasn't made some really negative statement about Israel.
Okay.
And the problem with that is I my head just went immediately, and if you do that, there's going to be congressional hearings by the Israeli lobby forced on them and saying, you're promoting this guy who is committed to the destruction of Israel. And it becomes a huge...
When you say promoting, what would you do? If you're reaching out to these clerics, how would that be promoting them?
No, you would be promoting the clerics and you'd be putting them on the Twitter feed and giving their statements
giving
prominence. And then you can you see the...
And legitimacy.
We're giving them legitimacy.
Which does not require congressional approval, though, so why worry about it?
Well, because it doesn't require approval, but you could have... very, very difficult. See, I could see the accusation. See, we're promoting these guys who are anti-Israel. They're committed to the destruction of Israel. Mm-hmm. You, whoever, you, the State Department, Obama, whoever, is not really a firm supporter of the State of Israel. And that's so what the general point is this, that a government like the United States has, it's very difficult for them to act in a decide because they have to account for hundreds and hundreds of different interests. It's why small companies and small organizations can often be far more versatile. Mm-hmm. They can go with the flow and they don't have to answer to 1,000 different bosses.
I always think about the size of government. I think about the movie Hot Shots. You remember the movie Hot Shots? Underrated movie, absolutely beautiful movie. Where the admiral's on top of the aircraft carrier and his hat blows off and he said, "Hey, spin around and get that, will you?" It just, you can't. It's funny because you can't. You can't. This is a big ship to turn. You can't spin it on a dime. It is what it is.
And this is not about Republican or Democratic president.
This is about national security.
It's about the way institutions behave, and it's going to be a problem that we're going to have.
Here's the deal. This is what's about this ISIS thing. It's a nice sentiment that we reach out to clerics and we reach out to them and they can reach out to their people and stuff like that. It still won't work. It still won't work because when you deal with an ideology, I want you to think about water running downhill and you stopping that water with just your hands running downhill. It just can't. You can't stop it. Whether you curb it a little bit, you can dam it a little bit, but it just is what it is. It's going to keep growing, and the clerics can reach out to a certain amount of people, but you talk about those young men that have never had a girlfriend, never had any friends, and they now have this big, giant ISIS mm-hmm. movement that's yeah. basically, and Twitter, by the way, gives you credibility. There's a program called Clout that gives you a score, your social mm-hmm. media score, right? Mm-hmm. Your clout
number
score.
Of followers.
Right,
there's like
all
that,
this
yeah.
stuff like this, right? It scores you. So it's to the point where your following, your size on social media gives you credibility. So you have those young guys, you have these clerics telling you, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And you have this big, giant organization that's huge on social media saying, come to us.
Yep.
Which do you pick as a young man who has no friends, no girlfriend, no nada, right?
Yeah, we got to deal with that issue. And it's why, as I look out into this year and what's liable to happen, I think on the military battlefield, we're going to be able to take back ISIS territory. Because once these folks are assembled into definable areas, basically you can slog out and you can overpower them.
And then what?
But the problem is that there's a completely porous, you can't build walls over borders anywhere. It doesn't work anywhere in the world, didn't work in the Great Hall. And the border in question in the Middle East is the southern border of Turkey. It's mm-hmm. open desert.
Okay,
and
right.
and it's indefensible, in effect. And as long as folks are coming in from the West and having that attraction, and essentially, you got to win the war worlds. And the message has got to be, you're going to be out there in the desert. It's going to be miserable and it's not going to be you're going to die. It's going to be bored. You're going to be bored to death.
Let's move from social media. And I want to have one more key point on social media. Then I want to move to the ground. I want to move to the actual battle itself coming up next. We're talking ISIS on the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Fear not, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will be discussing President Obama's executive action on gun control. But first, we are talking ISIS. We just discussed the social media prowess of the group known as ISIS or ISIL. I stick with ISIS because it sounds like my favorite show, Archer.
The scary thing about them is they're not just crazy people screaming in the desert.
I'm not worried about crazy people. No, there's crazy people. Hold on a second, because we conjure up this image of just people in robes running around in the sand mm-hmm. and living in caves, right? And this was mm-hmm. the Osama bin Laden thing, right?
Yep.
That they're just hiding a holed up in some cave somewhere. These people have conference calls. They have Wi-Fi. They mm-hmm. have smartphones. These people are organized, and they're not just running around shooting mm-hmm. random people. Once we move away from that thought, that thought of them just being willy-nilly run around the desert shooting people, I think we start to take them a whole lot more seriously.
But you know what scares me? In a way, the fact that they got Wi-Fi, conference calls, whatever, that stuff we can intercept.
The scary,
but we haven't the, all of
well,
it.
Not all, but a lot.
Okay,
I think the scary thing about them is that they're not a command and control organization.
They don't have a uniform.
I mean, you take those people in San Bernardino. Nobody in the Middle East told them what to do. There was a general message about attack, do something here. And nobody told them. They gave them the idea. But there was no call that said, here, on this date, you take these weapons and you do this. Because we could intercept that. We could stop that. We have a chance for that. If they're just implanting a generic idea that this country is evil and you wanna sow carnage, that is way harder to stop.
I'm about to blow your mind, Doc.
Right.
I'm about to blow your mind. Here's why we can't intercept a lot of their information. Do you know their number one source of relaying information? It's not Twitter. I'm going to blow your mind. Ready for this? PlayStation 4.
Really?
It's PlayStation 4. It's games like Call of Duty. It's games like Splinter Cell, where let's say I were to play, I can play with up to six people at a time against another group of six people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a microphone.
And you embed messages.
And the internet.
Or?
Not embed messages. Mm-hmm. We're not typing anything. Okay. We're talking freely.
You're talking.
We're speaking freely.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, say I've got Jay in here, I've got you in here, and I'm saying, okay, Jay, I want you left. Go over to the church. I need you to plant that bomb over there. I need Doc O'Neill. I need you up in the tower. You're my sniper. I need you to do, you're going to take. They're going to run out of the east wing. I want you to take out the first five. When the first five are taken out, I can talk this openly. Because I'm talking about a game.
Because I was going to. My first reaction was, well, voice recognition. We've got some pretty good stuff. But
okay.
People are saying all those kinds of things in a game.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what we're saying. We're saying that we are planning attacks and strategy to kill other people and to destroy and level entire towns.
And we're sitting there playing a game where it looks innocent.
It looks innocent. It doesn't look innocent. So you're the NSA. You're the CIA, FBI. You're trying to intercept this. You're in all these games, and all these people are saying the same things about killing a bunch of people. You can't separate the wheat from the chaff.
What's scary about that? You blew my mind.
Yes.
What's scary about that is for every real attack embedded in there, there's 100,000 where it's just some 12-year-old playing a game.
Yeah. Mom, I'll be up for dinner in a minute.
This is the problem with a lot of things, like even letting people out of prison. You know, you let 10,000 people out of prison, somebody somewhere is going to do something bad.
It's going to happen.
You take a random sample of 10,000 people in the Sun Bowl who are not in prison, somebody somewhere in there is going to do something bad too.
Yes, right, exactly.
It's a needle in a haystack problem.
But coming down to ISIS in their ability to use technology, like social media and now PlayStation 4, Xbox, whatever it is, I mean, they are talking to each other openly.
Yeah.
And it is hidden by the guise of we're just out here playing a game.
Yeah.
It's absolutely frightening. So they do that. These are the things that they do. We are the United States. We are, with our military budget, we are fortified against any alien attack that could possibly come to the planet Earth. Okay?
Yeah.
We are it. You can't beat us. Sorry, we are it. Now, why the heck can't we just take out ISIS? Because that's what, just bomb them down to the Stone Ages. Because
they're not configured in one place. If you put a small unit together of 30 people, you can bomb that. But if they're embedded in a city throughout, I mean, that's a house-to-house operation.
Right. Now, let me say, forget about house-to-house operation. Let me draw a line to the mob. Okay, mob had a lot of money. Well, mob still has a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Mob has a lot of money. They can pay people to do certain things. Maybe even not illegal things. Just driving something from one place to another. Just, hey, you're my driver. I need you to drive this place. Hey, go deliver this package over there to Paulie. That's all you did. That's nothing. No big deal. ISIS is doing. ISIS has a lot of money.
Yep.
ISIS has a lot of money.
And scary is they have multiple sources of money.
Right. And what they're doing, especially with their oil. Okay, their members of ISIS aren't driving. It's almost like a front organization to drive their stuff around.
Hiring contractors to drive trucks.
Yes. The United States will not bomb the tar out of these trucks. Why? Because there's an innocent person driving the truck.
He's just trying to feed his family.
There could be a leader of ISIS sitting shotgun in the truck. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. We're not going to blow. We have to realize this is, if you want to call it war, it's war. We got to break some eggs to make the omelet. Do you disagree, Greg?
It gets real tough.
It does get tough.
And especially we're not talking about somebody with a mat. We're not talking about a cargo ship you know, filled with oil, which you could capture, right? Yeah. We're talking about little trucks and thousands and thousands of them, and they're going across the desert.
They're all Toyotas, by the way.
And they're going into Turkey.
Yeah.
And remember, we said that border's porous?
Yeah.
So, you know, and oil isn't their only source of money.
They're making money. Just on the oil alone, they're making money hand over fist, and they're basically just stealing the rest. I mean, let's be real about that. Yeah, but they are well-funded. Yeah. And if they find the right seller, the right country to sell them what they need, look what we have.
They also move into a city and they steal from people, too.
Sure, absolutely. That's why I said they're stealing the rest of it. Absolutely.
So it's not like that's the only, it's not like you do that and then they die. That's one source.
How do you stop them?
You know, I think the military part's relatively, I mean, basically you can.
Drone bombing, I don't believe in.
Well, you have to, it depends on the target. I think you got to look and you say, or there's
a. Part of it, I agree.
You're out in the desert, there's a unit you can identify, sure. You hit it.
Yeah,
they're in the middle of a city, there's a relatively modest number of soldiers to take over a whole city, right? And they're just interspersed everywhere. I mean, the only way you take that out is a Dresden-type thing, which would be, you know, which would be a war crime. And
yeah.
Take out a whole big city because there's a few thousand troops embedded in there somewhere, and all that would do is probably create more recruits.
Speaking of recruits, if you think that ISIS is not alive and well in the United States, you are fooling yourself. You're kidding yourself, right?
Well,
they're here.
Oh, it's I tell you the other thing.
San Bernardino shows us they're here. Right?
And you know who's aiding Al-Qaeda in Yemen? Our good friends, the Saudis.
Oh, yes, absolutely they are. Yeah. But basically, they're supported, they have finances, they have technology, they're a lot more advanced than the 31,000 people that we originally said. Remember, President Obama came, there's only 31,000 of them. There's a lot more than 31,000.
A lot of Saddam Hussein's top echelon.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they're trained. They know what they're doing.
Okay. And by the way, they're organized and they're here. So let's do this. Speaking of President Obama, President Obama came out with some executive order, unilateral. He's going to work on his own and he's going to fix this whole gun problem that we have. Is it legal? Is it not? Will it work? Does it have any teeth? Is it good? Is it bad? We'll discuss next right here on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
I'm still doing my victory lap because I blew Doc's mind in the last segment. That PlayStation 4 thing is wild.
That's scary.
ISIS and PlayStation 4. Look, if you don't see the correlation, just look it up. You'll immediately understand what I mean. Just go on YouTube and look up, what's it, Call of Duty, and you watch how they play, how they speak.
And the verbiage that they're going to use in playing that game, if it wasn't a game, would be scary.
Just planning out. You get certain maps, certain parts of the country.
How you pull that off. Wow.
Yeah, yep. And now you stop that is absolutely amazing. Speaking of stopping things, President Obama is on a bullet train to stop mass shootings. So he claims he took to the White House with a team of, and I call them props, including somebody, a family from here that lost their family in the Tucson shootings. President Obama was emotional. He started to cry at one point talking about the mass shootings. And then he outlawed his plan, which he says was in his legal authority as the commander-in-chief in the executive branch, to unilaterally move on certain issues of gun control. Doc, I just want to get your opinion out of the gates on what you thought overall of his speech and his actions.
Well, first of all, context. The context of this, he's in the eighth year of his term. Mm-hmm. He faces a Republican House and a Republican Senate. And there is no chance of his getting through, I think, any significant legislation on any subject. And I think so. Point one is to realize nothing is going to happen by legislation. So clearly he went to staff and said, all right, what can I do this within the context of my my executive authority?
Sure.
And this is what they came up with. Now, predictably, the NRA side of this is going to say it's unconstitutional, et cetera.
We're going to get to that in a minute.
There will be a legal challenge.
I will actually blow your mind again, right. But go ahead.
Overall, your
opinion of what he brought to the table.
He is politically, here's what we have. On what he did, he has somewhere in the 80% plus public support for the specific actions he took. Now, that's before you add in it was Obama that did it. It said when you ask on the very specific questions of
the about
things
the Quinnipiac poll that was released.
A whole lot of polls, not just one, lots of them. I mean, basically. But what he but so you have broad support of the public. What you have on the other side is probably greater intensity. In other words, the minority who are opposed to this are probably more intensely opposed. And probably more single issue people. They're probably not including, however, anybody would ever vote for him or any of his allies anyway.
Okay.
The constitutional question, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I heard Paul Bender, who is the most educated person I know on this subject, was a Supreme Court clerk.
Correct.
And we know Paul.
Yeah.
And his short answer is yes, it's constitutional.
Sure. Okay.
That's not law. It will go to court. It will be decided.
Let's separate if he could or could not do it.
Yeah.
Let's separate that because that's not
well,
the
he can do
because
it.
He did.
You can, well,
because he did.
He did.
So here we go.
A president can issue an executive order.
Sure.
If it doesn't fly constitutional muster, it will get struck down by the court.
His first one was close Gitmo. Anyway, so let's go to
the Congress constrained
what
him
he
on
did
that.
What he did with the gun control, his measures.
What exactly did it
No, do? I'm asking what your opinion is. I'm trying to get your opinion on what he outlined.
My opinion is that it was I think he asked what's the most I can do, within the context of an executive order.
Mm-hmm.
And he found there's a sweet spot there of stuff that he believes he can do, Paul Bender believes he can do, and is widely supported by the public.
Okay, you're onto the can he or can't he. I'm talking about as a former police officer, someone who's seen shootings, the good, the bad, the ugly. You've made a claim that one of the biggest stories of 2016 is going to be another mass shooting.
Yeah.
What do you think of what he proposed? Or ordered,
I think it's a very minuscule step.
Okay.
Its impact will probably be very small, but he's trying to nudge the ball in a certain direction.
Well, I hate that word nudge, and I'll tell you off air why I hate that word nudge. Let me tell you why I can blow your mind. I tell you why. The NRA's response. Did you see the NRA's response?
They're against
it. They said, not really a big deal.
It isn't.
That's what NRA was. And by the way, my hats off to the NRA. As a man who's drinking right now from a Second Amendment coffee mug, I'm telling you, I was proud of the NRA for their stance because they have missed the mark on every single big piece every single softball they had lobbed to them for an entire year. They swung and missed.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, they hit square on because they could have said, well, he's the Muslim Kenyan and he's not our president and he wants our guns. And they could have gone that route again, but they didn't go that route. They said,
You know what?
It's not that big of a deal.
This is just to a return to a position of about 10, 15 years ago. There's a video on YouTube. Look it up. Wayne LaPierre, the executive vice president of the NRA, the guy who really runs it.
Yeah, my picture with him on my phone.
In favor of universal background checks. Testified for before they hardened their stance against.
So this
is just a return to a position they held in the
past. I'm glad you brought that up because I'm going back to the public support and to what the president was talking about because he gave the 84 out. He's talking about the Quinnipiac University poll that 84% of Americans, that's what it's overwhelming majority.
Mm-hmm.
He is talking about this support universal background checks. You line up 100 people, Doc. Line up me and you. Ask me what a universal background check is. I'll ask you what a universal background check is. You ask 100 people, they're going to give you a different answer. No one knows what a universal background check is. So I hear 84 overwhelming support. I think it's silly. I think it's pie in the sky, rainbows and unicorns because it's dumb. No one knows what they're talking about. They asked a bunch of people who knew nothing about what they were talking about and said, do you support universal background checks so we can keep guns out of the hands of bad people? Yes!
This is true of almost any issue.
Ask
people what does government-run healthcare mean.
Exactly.
And you discover, and these by people who don't know the difference between a deductible and a copay.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is true of most of our complex issues.
Agreed.
The details are not very well understood.
Agreed.
And people react at an instinctive level if they say, well, if this is going to keep guns out of the hands
save just one person.
Or keep guns out of the hands of bad people, then that seems like a good thing.
Right.
Instinctively, to most people. having some sort of check to make sure somebody is not mentally disturbed or has a record as a felony or a terrorist or whatever, seems to make instinctive sense.
Right.
And so most people are not heavily ideological on issues like
this. Without seeing details.
Yeah.
Without seeing details. Do you think that somebody do you think somebody that sells guns for a living or to make a living should be licensed by the government or not? Should be licensed like any other gun store? Everyone's like, yeah, of course.
That sounds plausible.
When no one will say, well, how many guns is that? I mean, are they just selling one to their neighbor? Is that, mm-hmm. I mean, how many guns? Is that 50 a year? What is that? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. They'll just say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Then we see overwhelming support. That drives me bad. On both sides of the ball, by the way, because Republican and Democrat. I hate hearing that kind of stuff, especially when it comes, and I know it's your wheelhouse. I'm not insulting it, Doc. I'm just saying that when it comes to issues like this, especially when it deals with our Constitution, it really drives me batty.
And now, that critique is a fair one, and it, however, applies to almost all of our issues.
Agreed. You know, agreed.
You can't get people to respond to detailed policy proposals that they haven't thought about.
Yes.
Those proposals get reduced to bumper stickers. People react to the bumper stickers.
Amen to that. Yeah. You ready to blow your mind a second time?
Just the nature of the beast.
I'm going to blow your mind again. I'm going to go 3 for 3 here. I'm going to do a hat trick. Watch this.
Okay.
I was excited about it.
Really?
See? Blow your mind again. They're 3 for 3. That's the hat trick right there. That's Gretzky style, buddy. Watch me go. I like what he was talking about. I think there were two parts of it that are going to get struck down in the courts immediately. It's not even going to – there's just no way in the world. We are going to have doctors have the ability to report to the feds somebody is mentally unstable and mentally unfit that will be reported to NICS, our background check system, right? Mm-hmm. There's no – that – absolutely tramples the 14th Amendment. You need due process as it is. As it
14th
stands
Amendment
now,
is not due process. It's equal protection.
Equal protection and due process. Both the 5th and the 14th handle due process.
Okay.
Both the 5th and the 14th handle due process. So we. But if you break that down, just that one piece alone, as it stands now, you have to be by a court. What is it? Sent to a mental institution involuntarily, or deemed in what is it? So you can't trial. You're not. You can't go. You're a little nutty. You can't stand
you're
trial.
Not, you're incompetent to stand.
Thank you. Thank you. Incompetent to stand trial. Those are the only two things. Both of those have due process. You can't have Dr. Whatever Silly saying, you know, this guy's just a wacko, and I don't like guns, and he loves guns. He's got his NRA sticker. I saw him rolling in here, and he's wearing an NRA T-shirt. He's mental infant. You can't have that. You need to have some sort of due process. So that's going to get struck down. Mm-hmm. The rest, the good stuff, I'm going to tell you about next right here on The Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
So love it when Doc and I get to have a chat, especially when it's about guns. Holy cow, how fun is that? Before the break, we were talking about one of the pieces that Barack Obama's unilateral move on gun control is going to be struck down by the courts, and that was what's protected by due process. And I think, once again, we don't know the exact details. It was just mentioned that, yeah, doctors are going to be able to report to NICS. NICS is our background check system, that somebody's mentally unfit. Not cool. It runs akin to the, and President Obama brought it up as well. It runs alongside of the we can't let somebody who's on a no-fly list, someone who's on a terror watch list, buy a firearm. Oh, yes, we can, Mr. President. As much as this might anger a lot of people, and I have an outdoor show on Saturdays. Yesterday, my outdoor show, we were talking about whether you like someone's religion, what they do, what they say. It doesn't matter. If they're a United States citizen, they're protected by the Second Amendment. It is what it is. You're protected by the Second Amendment, your right to bear arms, the 5th and the 14th to due process if one of those liberties to be stripped away from you, right? How far off am I?
Not far. Okay. And you've thought about this one a lot more than I have.
Okay. And just because this is my wheel.
But I will say this. What we saw was a speech. It wasn't a set of regulations. And the devil is always in the details.
Amen
and it's
that.
How you implement it. And so even though Paul Bender was basically judging the totality of this
and
to be constitutional, I also think the other side is they don't want to be struck down in any part of this. By the Supreme Court, and I would expect their to be as careful drafting as they can do to avoid a basis for striking it down. We haven't seen the written document.
Especially when it comes to, and you talk about support from both sides of the ball. If you want any support from the right, you want any support from any Republican around, there has to be carve-outs with this whole, you have to be licensed if you're selling for profit. Mm-hmm. If you're selling a gun for profit, you need to be a licensed gun dealer. And that's if
they got to define that.
They have to.
They have to define that. Although, I mean, vagueness is one of the ways to strike down anything. So it's got to be defined in a way that any person will know whether or not they're included or not.
$500 million. And it's you and I are going to be covering the State of the Union address. $500 million. It seems like we throw billions and trillions, millions around like it's just no big deal. Because I immediately, when the president said we're going to carve out $500 million, $500 million for mental health.
You know, it's
I love it. I'm like, yes. But then I thought, wait a second. A, it's government. They'll spend it improperly. B, how are they going to say? How are we going to do that? What are you going to do?
$500 million would not buy every American a Starbucks.
That's true.
So let's see that. I mean, there's 330 million Americans. Let's see that. Yeah, there's a reason things are in billions when at the national level.
Sure.
There's 330 million. $3 a head is $1 billion.
Right.
So let's scale that by person.
Yeah. So what is the 500 million going to do? What is the 500 million? What are you going to do? What are you going to use it for? Or that's the odd thing to me.
It's not that the answer is. It's one of those things. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not very much.
But it sounds like a lot, but it's in he didn't though. But usually they'll say over 10 years.
They said over. Well, and
that's the worst. That makes it even worse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you see this in budgetary things all the time. When people are talking about how much when somebody is spending money on something that they don't want to spend, they always give you the 10-year figure.
Yeah, it's over 10 years.
So you see that in the legislature for education, which
absolutely,
they've been very stingy about. They're talking about this is how much it's bringing in over 10 years. Wait a minute. Not only do you have multiplier by 10, but it's more than that because compound inflation.
Sure.
So it's a whole lot. When you want to talk about how little you're spending, you only talk about it's only this many dollars in this year's budget.
Exactly.
And everybody on every side of every issue plays that game. I always first take it and I reduce it to this year's, and then I divide by 330 million and I see what's the per capita this year, and then you can scale it. Most people do not deal very well in the difference between millions and billions and trillions.
Because the politicians know this, by the way.
Yeah.
They know that very well, that we'll just follow like little sheep. Yeah, let me say this, though. I said this on Evening News, and I'll say it again. 500 million, I called it. Okay, a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a good start. Not going to fix the problem by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to stop a law-abiding citizen from owning a weapon and then suffering from depression later in life and shooting someone. It will not.
The other thing is about spending is if you want to spend money wisely, you don't throw a whole barrel full of money in year one. I remember many years ago, there was somebody decided they could, actually it was Nixon, President Nixon, decided he could make some, after arguing against funding for cancer, he decided it was a political issue and he put a boatload of money in the first year for cancer. And in reality, if you want to spend that money wisely, you put in a small amount in the first year, you build up capacity and you increase it over years, because what do? You don't just buy a cure for cancer.
Right.
You train researchers, you support promising lines of research, and over a period of time, you develop the capacity to deal with it. But that is less politically sexy than saying we're going to put 500 million or whatever many billions of dollars it was into curing cancer because people want to cure cancer.
And let's be honest, we're dealing with politicians. We're dealing we need politically sexy is what we're dealing. But
That induces people to do the right thing.
Let me go with shocked a lot of people, because they said it came from President Obama. It's about guns. He's coming after our guns. Let's go buy guns. That's what really the reaction of a lot of people were. And then I started talking to my buddies that own gun stores. Of course, they're excited about it because President Obama said guns. President Obama said guns.
Oh,
there's a line out the front door.
An immediate effect is a line in that store,
and it's awesome. Yeah, you can't beat
He has been their best marketer they've ever had.
Well, let's talk about NICS. NICS is the system in which you get a background check.
Okay,
this is where you go in and say I'm Doc O'Neill, and this is my socials.
If
my
you
address,
know about I'm this, tell us the details
I'm
how that works.
You. So what it goes in the system, they enter all the information that you put on your little application. All right. Mm-hmm. The NICS system runs your background check. And I know I'm being a dun at the SS system, but it's easy for me to say. NICS will run your background check, and they'll shoot an answer back to the store owner. Proceed, hold, or no. Cannot, right? The hold is the sticky part. Mm-hmm. The hold is the very sticky part because they have 3 to 5 days, depending on the geographic location, they have 3 to 5 days to investigate. Now, they could have said, you know, with Mike Russell, my goodness, there's Mike Russells everywhere. Mike is a very, very common name. Something could have come in. They just have to look in. Oh, his address. Oh, he was over here. Okay, that's the right guy. Okay, go ahead. He's good.
Yeah, right? I've been stopped 3 or 4 times coming back from international flights where I had to sit and wait 45 minutes while they figured out.
Sure, you know. Sure. And that's what the hold is for, right? Mm-hmm. But here's what happens if they don't have an answer. The onus goes back to the gun store owner, whether or not to sell. They can proceed. They can go ahead. Yeah. You can, or you can say no. You can say yes or you can say no, right? And now the onus is on the poor gun store owner that just thinks, I guess I'll just flip a coin here at this space. President Obama said he's going to add new agents. He's going to beef up that system. I still think they're running Windows ME on that system. So I think that they are actually, they're going to get an upgrade. They're going to be open 24/7. Thank the good Lord. And for Second Amendment guys like me that wanted, there's some people that work night shifts. If they want to go to a gun shop, you know, they'll go to Walmart or something like that, buy a gun, they can have a background check done right there. I think that's absolutely amazing. That is great. It's good news for a lot of people. Gun store owners are excited about it. And I think it was a big win for everybody from the president.
Yeah,
huge.
As somebody interested in the safety aspect, I have a concern about that middle category, which is we don't know. It seems to me you got to hold it until you figure it out.
Sure.
And yes, that's
going to
take
manpower, and it comes down to the Second Amendment and a fringe.
Somewhere, some guy who wants his gun now is going to have to wait a little longer. I think that's part of the price you pay for a safer society.
But it's not the price. It's that dang, here's that word again. We keep, it's right here. It says not to be infringed right here, infringed. And a lot of people think, okay, so if I say, so if I'm on some sort of a list, like, no, we're still investigating him. Days go by.
Hey, Mike.
Weeks go by. Hold on. Months go by. How am I doing then? Is that infringing on my right to bear arms? Yes, because you can't understand that I put maybe the 5 and the 3 looked like on my Social Security number. You know what I mean? That's where that system comes.
You guys always forget the first 4 words of that sentence. A well-regulated militia.
Darn right. And you know,
have the right to join the National Guard and have a weapon in it.
Darn right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you think. You think the Second Amendment is only for military?
I think it's very clear from the first 4 words of the sentence, yes.
So you do not think that the citizens of the United States should be able to own a gun unless they're in the military?
I think that...
I mean, according to the Second Amendment, I'm not putting you on blast.
As an absolute right, I think it does not give an absolute right to every citizen to own a gun. Otherwise, why would it say a well-regulated militia being necessary?
Because for the security of a free state.
Yep.
Can we do a whole show on just that?
You take your what was the kind of weapon they had?
Easy there, big guy.
In 1700, the
muzzleloader. Right.
You know, where you had to shove a plunger down it for every single bullet.
Here we go. I give up. We're
not coming together on that one.
We're not going to come together on that. We're not.
Let me tell you where you can get our old shows. MikeO'Neill.org, all our old shows. KTR.com, we'll have the last 3 or 4. And O'NeillResearch.com, all my other world.
O'NeillResearch.com. They have the other...
That's the daytime job.
Which one has the podcast?
The podcast are on MikeO'Neill.org.
MikeO'Neill.org.
Twitter feed is Michael J. O'Neill.
Michael J. Check that out. You check at Mike Russell KTAR. How about that? Let's do that, huh? You send me an email, Mike at KTAR.com. I don't care where you want to go. Talk to us. Thanks, guys. Been fun. KTAR News.